WRCE 1450 AM W299 CD Richland Center.
Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
On a morning show today from WRCO, we're pleased to have in the studio Kim Johnson, superintendent of Kickapoo Schools, and Scott Walter, who is the Kickapoo School Board president. Good to have them in here today to talk about an upcoming referendum in the district. Scott, good morning. We'll start with you. And you're as president of the school board. It's a very proud area there in the Kickapoo region, isn't it?
It is. We've got over 50-year history now at Kickapoo Schools of excellence in education. Kickapoo Schools, Phil, was formed in the 1960s through the consolidation of the Viola and Reedstown schools. So we serve that area, the students that come from the villages of Reedstown, Viola, and the surrounding areas. But we also benefited early on from a gift by Lee and Helen Griffin. And you'll see their names prominently displayed in the school. But they allowed us to, through their gift, allowed us to build really an outstanding educational facility. We've got a wonderful auditorium, indoor heated swimming pool, so all our students learn to swim as they matriculate through Kickapoo. But an incredibly dedicated and wonderful staff. And what we're here to talk about today is, unfortunately, we're not the only school that's been here facing this situation, but really static state funding for public education has forced a lot of schools to go to referendum, operating referenda, to maintain that high level of educational offerings for students. And that's what we're here again to talk about today.
Scott, I know that you've had some improvements recently. You've been able to make some improvements in the district without going to referendum prior, haven't you?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've talked about quite a bit. This referendum for operations, so there are a couple different types of referendum. One is a capital referendum where you solicit additional tax monies from local taxpayers to pay for a particular project, say a new gymnasium, remodeling of the classrooms, et cetera. And then there's operating referenda, which are intended just to provide additional needed funding to pay for basic operations, so staff salaries, electricity bills, transportation, things like that. But we have been able, the school board, I think, has been very fiscally conservative, and we've been able to pay for a lot of the capital improvements over the last really couple decades without going to referendum.
You improved the pool not too long ago, didn't you?
The pool's probably the most recent example. We also updated the track facilities, repaved the parking lot, which is a very costly endeavor, redid some of the water and sewer mains, put a roof on part of the building, all very costly things that, again, we were able to do without going to referendum.
Yeah, I think about, and obviously the school board that went before you, too, you've been pretty frugal and very useful over the years, because I still think of Kickapoo when I go there as kind of a Cadillac school. I mean, it's been well kept over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's been a lot of effort in maintaining those incredible facilities that Lee and Helen Griffin afforded us.
Indeed. Kim Johnson here, superintendent as well of Kickapoo. And Kim, the referendum coming up on April 2nd. And the big thing is just you're looking at school funding, as a lot of districts in the area are, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a number of districts who are needing to go to their communities to ask for support to continue to operate as we are currently operating. With this operational referendum, it's not that we're asking for an increase to add anything to what we are offering at this point, but just to continue those high-quality programs and services that we have been providing our community.
How much money are you talking about?
We're asking for a recurring referendum of $400,000 with an additional $400,000. And an additional $400,000 on top of that until we get to that $1.6
million. So the goal is just for operational and
the goal
staff?
Operational to continue exactly what we are doing right now. But with the increased costs and declining enrollment and the way state is our funding school districts, we're finding ourselves in a deficit and We need to request that increased levy so that we will be able to get the funds in order to continue. So in 1993, they set those revenue limits. And so that's what we are operating under currently. So with this ask, we're asking for a larger cup or a ceiling that will extend a little bit more than that limit that was set to us in 1993. Over the years, there have been minimal per pupil increases. And as you know, the last few years, there's been inflationary increases that we cannot keep up with our current funding. So the ask is that we're gradually moving into that 1.6 to make it easier on our taxpayers, building to that point. The recurring, because state funding isn't going to look much different, so we need to look at this in a long-term, consistent basis to give us the stability that we need to continue focusing on student excellence.
What are the numbers? What's enrollment looking like for the future in the Kickapoo District? Any idea?
Yes, our numbers are we're balancing kind of right around the 400s, but decreasing slightly over the years, with graduating classes going out in the 40s and then bringing in 4K students in the 20s. Then each year we're experiencing that decline. Spread out across the district, so it makes it really difficult to eliminate a teacher because it's just a few students per class. But over the years, that really adds up.
Have you had the chance to talk with other districts about, I'm guessing they're kind of in similar dilemmas, aren't they?
They are in similar dilemmas, and we do try to spend time talking about how to inform our public and how to make our decisions transparent, to really talk about our history and the relationships, kind of relying on that trust factor where you've seen how we have done so many different projects and not gone to our community for that additional referendum. We haven't gone to referendum since 2005. So we have really, I think, built our story to share that if we don't need the money, we're not going to seek, we're not going to spend the money. We're kind of frugal. In 1993, part of the reason that our limit is so low is because we were a low-spending district. It's just who we are, you know, try to be very economic and fiscally responsible. And that's how we treat other people's money as well. But getting back to your point, I'm sorry about conferring with other districts. We share information and try to work together to really solve the problems. Even on the next level, the state level, how can we influence change and bring in awareness when you have so many districts in the state who are requiring a referendum to operate. I think that deserves recognition at our state level.
So the next step is to work with your legislators and kind of look at, you know, different ways to improve funding in the future then.
Right. When you consider that in 1993, the efforts to put the limit on our revenue was in fact, done to support taxpayers so they couldn't raise taxes to extreme amounts. And now we're in an era where that's where school districts are needing to go to ask their districts for the funds to continue operating. And we realize a lot of these districts, it's getting to be a big ask, you know, to support public schools.
I know back in the day, sometimes schools even had a slush fund. You know, we're talking 70s and 80s where they had, you know, okay, we need to go buy a bus or whatever the case might be. You had that ability, but you don't necessarily have that ability anymore, do you?
No, we don't.
So as things go by and, you know, you talk about revenue limits and per pupil and things like that, even if you lose one student, you know, maybe they move to another district or whatever the case might be, that's a big deal for a district, isn't it?
That is a big deal. When you consider Wisconsin and the number of rural schools in Wisconsin and the statewide declining enrollment, all schools are facing that decline in their revenue as well because it is per pupil funding. And as a general population, we have changed kind of the family dynamics of not having as many babies. So it's a natural decline in our enrollment.
Yeah. Rural area, Scott, and I know, you know, you grew up in the area, but, you know, years ago you had the farm families and you had six or seven children and per family. You don't necessarily have that anymore, do you?
Yeah. The landscape around here, of course, has changed incredibly just over my lifetime. Our farm out there along Elk Creek, south of Iola, you know, I knew every neighboring family. They'd been there for generations. There were still dairy herds up and down the creek, and those are all gone. And many of my neighbors now are weekenders, you know, that have some vacation property. And they pay their property taxes, but, of course, their kids aren't attending the local schools, and that's part of the reason that we're facing these declines in enrollment. And, you know, Kim pointed out something that's really, really important, I think, to emphasize. What we're seeking through this operating referendum is the authority to levy an additional amount of money, $400,000 each year for the next 4 years for a final level of $1.6 million. But it's our intent is to seek the authority. That doesn't mean that we're going to levy that much each year. The way school budgets work, we establish a school budget based on our projected expenses every October. At the annual meeting, which everybody in the district is welcome to attend and see that budget, but when we understand what our likely expenses are, then we'll understand the revenue we need to meet those expenses and what portion of that will have to come from the local taxpayers. So that's the amount that we'll actually levy each year during the next 4 years.
And again, you as a board, that's where you know, maybe some of that frugalness comes in. If you don't use it all, you won't use it. You know, maybe it goes on to the next year. Is that how it works then?
Yeah, that's the key point. If we don't need it, we won't ask for it. It won't be levied for. So again, the $400,000, given the models that Kim and our business managers have come up with, that's sort of what we expect in the worst case scenario we might need. But again, it's not necessarily what we're going to levy for in the end.
Your district is unique, though, and it has changed more from, you know, kind of that rural farming community. You've got people from all walks of life living in your district now, don't you?
Yeah, and that adds to the flavor of the experience for our students. You know, the diversity is a word that's bantied all over nowadays, but it is important for kids to share time and learn about folks from different walks of life. So, yeah, Kickapoo is becoming a more diverse school as the world is, and I think that's only going to be beneficial for those kids as they grow up.
Indeed, and down the road, this is a part of the legacy. You know, the next few years, I think, are pretty critical to schools of Kickapoo size.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what the big picture behind what we're talking about here, the fact that you've had multiple local schools in talking about the same issue, the fact that something like 87% of the public schools in the state have had to or are going to operating referendums suggests that, you know, there's something wrong with the state public school funding model. Kim mentioned that our revenue limit was established 31 years ago, and aside from periodic and very slight inflationary increases, the revenue we get from the state has been relatively flat, whereas our expenses have increased every year to the point where right now we're looking at a deficit of somewhere in the neighborhood of $3,300 per student. And that's the gap that this operating referendum is intended to address.
How hard is it as a board to, you know, as far as staff, because, you know, it used to be insurance was kind of a nice little bonus. But, I mean, some of those things you really have to look at make some tough decisions, don't you?
Oh, yeah. And we and every other school board around here are looking at those things as potential cost-saving measures. But our approach, I think, as a board and administration has always been that the heart and soul of a school is in the teachers. They're the ones in daily contact with the students. They're the ones that are developing skills. They're the ones that are addressing behaviors and producing the good citizens and future business leaders, et cetera, educators that we all want. So we're very protective when we discuss cost-saving measures. We're also very cognizant of the fact that we need to support the careers of these very important teachers that have the greatest impact on our kids.
And you have a staff that many of them have been there for a number of years, haven't they?
Yeah. We've got the old guard, a number of them still around, but also a lot of new teachers over the last 4 or 5 years that are bringing their skill set and their new views of the world into the classroom.
Some other bonuses here, and this just came across today, but I see you have a couple of Herb Kohl Award winners in your district, Kim. That's something to be proud of, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I think through the years, we've had some Badger Teacher of the Years.
Oh, yeah.
It's really nice that they get the recognition for all of the hard work that they put in, all of the selfless giving, seeking innovative ways to meet the needs of all the students that are in their class.
And we had your cast of your play in last fall. They do a dynamic job.
They do a phenomenal job. Yes.
It was a pleasure to see them in there, too. But Haley Gander, Herb Kohl Award winner, and Evelyn, is it Hazel? Is that how you say the last name?
Oh, our students, yes.
Your students, yes.
Yes, the students were winners of the Herb Kohl. Yeah. Just really phenomenal students in all realms of what they participate in. True leaders and kind. Evelyn Hazel, too, is now part of our Sea Perch team that just won nationals recently.
Awesome.
So they are looking at a trip to compete at a national level.
Yeah. Congratulations to them. And that's something, too. You know, you talk about education. There's some things you can offer in a school district your size that maybe larger districts can't, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's just really those strong relationships and supporting students in their unique passions and helping them to grow and develop in a safe environment where they feel free to explore and learn at high levels.
Indeed. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about the upcoming Kickapoo School referendum and the Kickapoo School District with Scott Walter and Kim Johnson on The Morning Show. Kickapoo Schools, our subject on The Morning Show today from WRCO. Dr. Kim Johnson here and Scott Walter as well, updating us on the upcoming referendum and all the good things going on in the Kickapoo District. Kim, as far as some of the other things that we talked about and challenges, talking about the voucher program, that's something that's, it's a tough thing for public schools to compete with, isn't it?
It is a tough thing, and it's concerning because of the increase of funding that is going to the voucher program. Looking at, in our future, a removal of some of the caps that was limiting the percentage of voucher students that could be funded. It's a difficult concept because when you consider the state trying to fund one school district and now trying to tackle two school entities, seems like a pretty big challenge. Just in our district, the amount of funds, I think, do you remember, Scott, was it, we were, our first year,
this year, it's $113,000.
But it was like an increase of $100,000. And then, of course, other districts around us are seeing some really quite more drastic increases in funding that is going to the voucher program. And what's concerning is that it's not a very transparent process so that taxpayers understand that this amount of funds are going to this voucher program. Which essentially takes away from our public schools.
And Phil, maybe real quick, it might bear explaining to the listeners what that voucher program is. Certainly most folks that turn on the radio from time to time have heard of it, but essentially what has been proposed and what's happening right now, it's being sold as parental choice, providing parents the increased choice to send their kids to private schools as opposed to the public school in which they live. But what's happened, the legislature has not increased funding for schools in the state. So when parents decide to send their kids instead of to the local public school to a private school in the area, the state funds go with them. So those funds then move out of the public school district and into the private school coffers. And it's challenging because, as Kim said, there's been no additional funding invested in public education or in education in the state. So we're trying to struggle, as we've talked about earlier, to fund public schools with flatline based state funding. And now public schools are having to send some of the remaining funds to private schools on top of that. So it's kind of a double whammy that, unfortunately, when we see it promoted by our legislators, it's always in the sense of this parental choice. Well, parents have always had the choice, but if their choice is to go to private schools who don't have to abide by the same state regulations and statutes, they don't have to accept all children, the parents originally had to pay those additional tuitions and fees, but now it's coming out of the public coffers, and it's really been a double whammy that has led a lot of schools to the operating referenda option.
What are some common questions you're getting right now as we approach the referendum, Kim?
A lot of the questions or concerns are looking at school districts running a non-recurring referendum or recurring referendum. So I think they're looking for clarity on why Kickapoo is asking for a recurring referendum and not a non-recurring like some of the other area school districts are running. We have not run a referendum since 2005, but because of the scenario presented earlier, we're looking at a need for support in funding that doesn't go away. A non-recurring is a pocket of money for a certain number of years, and then that money goes away. Typically, schools running a non-recurring are in that cycle of a continuous, every 4 years running a referendum. So we looked at our problem, which was a deficit in our budget, and that this deficit didn't see an end. So because it does cost money to go to referendum, and it does take a focused energy on behalf of staff and board to inform and run the referendum, we felt that a fiscally responsible decision for Kickapoo was to ask for the recurring, to ask for that revenue limit ceiling to be raised to meet the needs of our students and go into perpetuity as such. Understanding completely that is a ceiling, and we're just asking for that room as we build our budgets and focus, having that stability to know that we're funded and can continue to put our efforts into meeting the needs of our students, which are ever increasing. The needs of our students seem to grow and the funding decreases. So our recurring will offer us the security to know that we're funded to continue to work and to meet the needs of our students. And that deficit isn't going away, so the recurring is just the new norm, I guess.
Additional programs have to be worked in just about every year. You probably have to add something that you didn't expect, right? That's the way it goes?
Yeah, we have a lot of discussions at the school board level, led by Kim sitting next to me here, who's got a 30-year career behind her as an elementary educator, and she really understands more than anybody I think I've ever met the particular challenges that our incoming young people have. You know, like a lot of schools around here, economically depressed area, there's There are kids coming in oftentimes without a home life that was supportive of reading or, you know, learning the alphabet early in their lives. So there are challenges that have to be addressed to get these kids on a path to academic and lifelong success. So, yeah, we talk about new programs and things we can do, and Kim, again, brings a lot of good experience and ideas to the table to help us address those. But, you know, solutions to problems like that usually lead to discussions about staffing, discussions about classroom space and facility needs. And those things cost money. And, again, that's part of the reason we're here, to maintain our ability to serve those students.
So what happens if it doesn't pass?
Kim, you want to take
Kim?
If it shouldn't pass, we're going to have to convene as a school board of education and administration and take a good look at where the possibilities would lie that we could make some cuts. In 2010, Act 10, our funding actually decreased. And so in that era, we actually made a lot of cuts to our schools and the programs that we were offering. So moving forward, any of the future cuts that we make are going to be staffing and programs. And that means that's personnel. And so there needs to be a lot of discussion and a lot of really some deep thought and reflection on how we move forward when you making cuts like that to your staff and programs.
And Phil, one of the concerns that we've talked about, and a concern I really feel, if we end up having to make some of those cuts to the services that are beneficial to our kids, we live in an era and operate in an era of open enrollment, where parents can send their children to any public school district in the state, and the state funding follows them. So there's movement across district lines, like Ithaca gained some students from the Richland district, et cetera. And if we start to cut programs and services, we may see more of our students moving out of the district, which is only going to exacerbate our funding, long-term funding issues. Having said that, I will say that challenge would also provide the opportunity for collaboration and districts working together to see what services they could partner on. Right now, we share a staff person that's hired jointly between the Kickapoo and Lafarge school districts. So it's a great example of how individual districts can cut expenses by sharing some of the burden with surrounding.
And you co-op with them for sports, for what, wrestling and football?
Many sports.
Yep. Yeah. So, what about the next question? Is about the effect on someone's tax bill. Does it have a significant effect, Kim?
Well, I think, like Scott had said, we put assumptions into our model, which impact the mill rate. So the mill rate will indeed increase, and it will impact tax bills. However, I've heard some residents concerned that their tax bill in its entirety would double. And what I want to caution is that we look specifically at a line item that states the school district, and that percent of the tax bill will indeed increase. Will it increase to the mill rates that have been identified? Like Scott had indicated, those were assumptions, and we were very conservative in those assumptions. So as we get accurate data that will fill the assumptions that we had created, most likely the mill rates will not go to that extent, but that's what we had to plan for as you look into the future. As difficult as that is when we, you know, try to determine what the weather will be, it's even more difficult with school funding because of the periods throughout the year that you receive the data that you need to put the budget together. So just the portion of the school tax will increase, but then there's also that tax credit that will also be applied from the state that is also on the tax bill.
What about how it looks on the ballot? Is it simple yes or no question, Scott?
It's a simple yes or no question. We worked hard to phrase the question so it's easily understood, you know, what we're asking and what the impact on an individual homeowner or a taxpayer will be.
We appreciate you coming in here to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Dr. Kim Johnson joining us, superintendent at Kickapoo Schools. And Scott Walter, good to have you back in here. It's been a little while since you've been
here. Good to be here. Yeah.
He is the principal of the Kickapoo School Board of Education. And we'll have more information about the community coming up in a moment on The Morning Show.
Since 1956, Meyer Oil and LP has been your trusted, locally owned fuel delivery partner. Whether it's for your home, farm, or business, we've got you covered. Offering a range of fuels from propane, diesel, gas, and bulk lubes, Meyer Oil is here for you. Serving most of Richland, Sauk, and surrounding counties, our friendly staff is ready to assist you. Please consider Meyer Oil and LP for all your fuel needs. Call us at 608-524-3914.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
The 6:30 update is sponsored by Court and Main Furniture and Mattress, helping you create the home you can't wait to come home to. Peaks of sun possible today, a high near 40, a low of 27 tonight. Snow developing late midnight or so, 2 to 4 inches possible, and an additional 2 to 3 inches of snow possible Friday morning. Right now in Richland Center, we're up 1 from the overnight low. It is 25.
A-Plus Furniture and Mattress Outlet, we want to make the transition as easy as possible. Whether you are moving into assisted living, downsizing, or looking for a change, we got it. We are willing to work around your schedule. We offer delivery, setup, and disposal. We carry a variety of comfortable and functional pieces to fit everyone's needs, such as lift chairs, adjustable beds, and more. Stop into A-Plus Furniture and Mattress Outlet to make your transition easier. Open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturdays, 9 to noon.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee, and here is what you need to know. Electric vehicle drivers in Wisconsin may soon have more places to recharge. Two bills signed by Governor Tony Evers allow the state to access $78 million in federal money. Chelsea Chandler with Clean Wisconsin notes they received bipartisan support from lawmakers, but not everyone is plugging EVs. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss calls the federal program a big boondoggle. Work on 64 charging stations could begin this fall, according to Wisconsin DOT. Four suspects in custody in the death of a man who was beaten in Stevens Point and later died. As of Wednesday afternoon, Arlen Sangster, Damon Kitzlerow, along with Christian Emerson and Brandon Baim, have either turned themselves in or been taken into custody. The four are accused of beating 61-year-old Donald Mitchell last Friday night in a Stevens Point parking lot. Mitchell was rushed to a local hospital and airlifted to Wausau, where he died from his injuries on Saturday. It doesn't appear the group knew Mitchell before Friday's incident, and officers have remained tight-lipped about a possible motive. So far, only Emerson has made a court appearance. He's facing a possible charge for battery and is free on a $50,000 bond. An Eau Claire man is accused of shooting a crossbow towards a neighbor. 35-year-old Robert Willie is charged with recklessly endangering safety, use of a dangerous weapon, and disorderly conduct. The incident occurred last Sunday. The report says police responded to the report of a man had shot a crossbow near a neighbor. No one was injured, and Willie eventually surrendered to police, who found two crossbows in his home. A court hearing is scheduled for next week. River Valley School District residents are invited to the final referendum informational session going on today at 5 at the River Valley Middle School Learning Center. Two capital referendum questions for the district will appear on the April 2nd ballot. An advisory task force made up of community members surveyed the community and came up with what residents felt were important for the district. Lauren Glassbrenner serves as the district administrator.
At our first two meetings, I'd say attendance has been right where I wanted it to be. And what I really like about these community meetings is oftentimes the people coming to these are people that haven't been involved thus far. So it's maybe a grandparent that hasn't come to a meeting or somebody that hasn't been at a sporting event. And so they're coming in to make sure they're informed voters either from the community as they don't have children yet, or they've had children and now they're in a retirement age. So it's been a nice new group of people getting the information.
In conclusion, two questions were finalized for the spring ballot. The first question includes renovations at the elementary, middle, and high schools at a cost of $19.5 million. The second question includes a building project at the high school at a cost of $14.5 million. Each question can pass or fail on its own. The impact on taxes will depend on which scenario passes, just one or two or both. All community members are invited to attend the final session, even if you have attended before.
They're welcome to come to any and all meetings that we're having, as well as we've really tried to bump up our social media by making sure we're informed with that. But we also have on rvschools.org, which is the district's website, many tabs that have given the last 2 years worth of kind of events that have led up to this point.
The final informational session will be held at 5, the Learning Center at the River Valley Middle School. Again, referendum information can be found on the River Valley School District website at rvschools.org. A Red Cross blood drive was held in Muscadet on Tuesday. 59 units of blood was collected, including 16 double red cell donations. Registration volunteers were Tobiah Frazier, Kennedy Cooey, Kate Frazier, and John and Jackie Schmadick. And United Presbyterian Women serve refreshments, including homemade baked goods. Mark your calendar for the next Muscadet Community Blood Drive coming up on Tuesday, June 18th, from 11:30 until 5:30. A night of high-powered music is set to fill the Richland Center City Auditorium this Saturday when Symphony on the Rocks takes the stage. Symphony on the Rocks is a rock band and an orchestra. The show will include the best of classic rock featuring hit music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. The show is unique each year and continues to offer something new. Symphony on the Rocks will again take place Saturday night at 7 in the Richland Center City Auditorium. Tickets priced at $35 are available in advance at Napa Auto Parts, Christie Sunnyside, and Ameriprise Financial Offices, all in Richland Center. Tickets can also be purchased online at eventbrite.com. A pair of audits show about 3/4 of workspaces in state office buildings are empty as many as 5 days a week. A panel of state lawmakers pressed leaders from the Department of Administration and the Universities of Wisconsin about their work-from-home policies. State Representative Bob Witke says the state has invested billions of dollars in office space. He questions why they should go unused. A second candidate has entered the race for the 96th Assembly District. Incumbent Republican Representative Lauren Oldenburg is seeking a fourth term in office. Oldenburg from Viroqua has represented the 96th since 2018. The district covers Vernon County and part of La Crosse County. One Democratic challenger has announced plans to run. Former La Crosse County Board Chair and former congressional candidate Tara Johnson is also running. And the former power plant in Genoa has been demolished. Dairyland Power Cooperative took down the coal-powered plant in a controlled demolition this week. The plant was used for 52 years. The company used about 400 pounds of explosives to knock down the plant and will spend the next few months cleaning up the steel and rubble, that is. Dairyland says it doesn't know what it will do with the site just yet.
The trees on your land are a valuable asset, and keeping them properly managed is a big responsibility. The staff at Meister Log & Lumber has been buying logs and standing timber in southwest Wisconsin since 1936. Meister's professional forest management team will help you meet your timber's potential. A win-win for all, as landowners receive green for the logs and Mother Nature stays green as well. Give professional timber manager Toby Witkowski a call at Meister Log & Lumber, 608-434-4413.
A few peaks of sunshine today, a high of 39, then snow on the way late tonight, 2 to 4 inches possible overnight, a low of 27, and a high of 37 tomorrow with an additional 2 to 3 inches of snow possible. The rest of the weekend, Saturday 37 and Sunday 40, with a 50% chance of light snow, possibly a wintry mix, 1 or 2 inches of snow possible. By Monday, periods of rain likely and a high of 48. Currently in Richland Center, after the midnight reading of 28 and a low of 24, it is 25 degrees.
Leighton Brown Memorial Scholarship is this Saturday with registration starting at 10. Bags fly at 11. Located at Wisconsin Riverside Resort, pre-registration is recommended. Call, text Nicole at 412-5788 or Bill at 588-5156. Entry fee $20 per team. Bring your bags and partner. Double elimination. 6 games guaranteed. Absolutely no ghost allowed. If you don't have a partner, let them know. There may be someone else looking for a partner as well. This Saturday, the bags fly for a great cause. Leighton Brown Memorial Scholarship is given to select graduates of River Valley High School attending a vocational technical college. Great times and a great event. See you Saturday at Wisconsin Riverside Resort at 10 a.m.
Sports Time is sponsored by Simon's Recreation Complex. Dive into greater community and healthier living. And also by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. Coming up, some notes on today, sports-wise. A few games in the great outdoors before tonight's snow. And the Bucks gave it a good go without Giannis and came up short against Boston last night.
Simon's Recreation Complex teaches swimming lessons for babies through adults. The goal is to have all children and adults comfortable, safe, and having fun in the water. All swimming classes are held in the heated indoor pool. Sign up is on now for group lessons. Learn to Swim classes are offered for all ages. Cost for an 8-week session of Learn to Swim classes is $40 for members, $75 for non-members. A child may also participate in the Every Child a Swimmer program, which provides lessons for only $10 once per year. Cost should never be a reason a child doesn't learn how to swim. Call Simon's Recreation Complex at 647-8522 or view our classes online at simonsrec.com. Classes start the week of March 26th. Remember, every child should learn to swim.
There are a few softball games in the area tonight, including the debut for the Riverdale Chieftains. After a scrimmage on Tuesday night, they will be hosting an opponent tonight, and that gets underway at 4:30. It's Riverdale and Cashton, no JV contest. Again, varsity only at 4:30 tonight at Riverdale Softball Field. And River Valley will be in action tonight. The River Valley softball team will play at Viroqua. There's an indoor track meet at UW-Platteville involving a few area teams as well, as the track season gets underway officially this evening. The Bucks closed with a rush at Boston last night, finally losing to the Celtics 122-119. They were playing without Giannis Antetokounmpo. Jason Tatum scored 31 for Boston. It was a good look for Milwaukee despite the defeat. The Celtics are running away with the Eastern Conference lead. Damian Lillard led the Bucks scoring column with 32. Bobby Portis added 24 to go with 15 rebounds. Boston led by 21 at one point, and it was late in the game before Milwaukee cut the margin below 10. Milwaukee hosts the Brooklyn Nets coming up on Thursday. Elsewhere, Indiana 122, Detroit 103, Miami 107, Cleveland 104, Sacramento 123, Toronto 89, Oklahoma City over Utah 119-107, the Clippers beat Portland 116-103, Phoenix 115, Philadelphia 102, Golden State 137, and Memphis 116. The Badger men's basketball team preparing for their first game in the upcoming NCAA tournament. Chucky Hepburn looks forward to the challenge.
Yeah, that was definitely hard, you know, going out like that and not being able to fight out there with my brothers. You know, definitely tough, but no more experience. You know, I'm just trying to take it one game at a time, prepare my body for this tournament this week. And, you know, we hope to make a long run in this tournament. So, you know, we got to do whatever we got to do to get our bodies right, our mental right, and, you know, just go out there and compete.
The Badgers play James Madison coming up late tomorrow night. Last night, a couple of more of the first four games. Colorado defeated Boise State 60-53, and Grambling State over Montana State 88-81 in overtime. The NCAA tournament actually has a few daytime games coming on. That's why people have been taking off work. Among the first ones today, Michigan State and Mississippi State at the Spectrum Center, and Akron plays Creighton early this afternoon. Duke Duquesne plays BYU as well, and Long Beach State and Arizona match up at around 1 o'clock this afternoon, among the day's earliest NCAA games. The University of Wisconsin women's hockey team is in the field of the Frozen Four for the 15th time in its history. The Badgers are seeded second. They will meet the third-seeded Colgate Raiders Friday night at 6:30. Here's Coach Mark Johnson.
Obviously, the magnitude of the game are higher. Everybody can see the finish line now. There's only four teams left, and the season's over on Sunday, and somebody's going to be a national championship Sunday afternoon, early evening. And so you can see that light at the end of the tunnel, which creates excitement because you're still playing. But the routine and the way you go about, I mean, we're creatures of habits.
The Brewers were off yesterday. They returned to action with a nighttime game against San Francisco. And it's not just watching one of the best small market franchises on the field, but the eating is pretty good today as well. At the ballparks, the American Family Field is rated second best in Major League Baseball for food. USA Today released its Best Reader's Choice Awards, featuring were establishments like J. Leinenkugel's Barrel Yard and the ballpark's Taco Bar and Friday Fish Fries. This is the second year for the Barrel Yard, which features Northwood's themes. With sports, I'm Phil Mee.
Kubota has the industry-leading VX Series subcompact tractor. Hi, this is Rick from the Homesteader
Good
Store.
Good morning, and VX welcome to the morning show on WRCO Radio. I'm Bo Henricks in for Phil Mee, and we have a very special morning show for you today because we get to talk about Symphony on the Rocks. And the fundraiser going on at the Richland Center City Auditorium. I am joined by three well-known community members. We have Roseanne Knorr, Andrew Sharp, and Mick Cosgrove. Thank the three of you for being here today. You know, it's already that time of year again where we're talking about Symphony on the Rocks. Are you excited for this year's new show?
Very much so, Bo. Thank you for having us. We're very excited. This show was here a few times years ago, and then with COVID, it got shut down, and we shuttered the auditorium itself. And so they kind of went through a stage of kind of gearing down and then decided to gear back up. I guess the old line would be they're getting the band back together. And so we're really excited to bring them back to Richland Center and to have them in the auditorium, which they absolutely love playing in the auditorium. The acoustics are amazing, and they talk about it all the time. So
I guess we're lucky too to be part of having them back on.
Yes, so that is the main goal of this concert will be to generate funds towards the current phase that we're in, which is working on the envelope of the building. So tuck pointing, all the doors and windows, those are all, you know, 1912-ish, 1913 era. And so we're looking very forward to being able to upgrade those, get them energy efficient, and make the building solid and secure so that we can focus on the inside.
Because really, you guys have already done a number of projects to it and some very successful ones when we talk about the elevator.
That's correct. Yeah. So we've done a lot. The early stages when the building was first acquired, we've gotten a new roof on. We've upgraded heating systems. The electrical has all been done. Mark Miller and his gang worked hard a couple of summers there. And so that's all been upgraded. We brought in a sprinkler system, so it's poised to just have the sprinkler heads pop through the ceiling. And a lot of that was stuff that is its main structure, the foundational stuff that we had to do, but you really couldn't see it from the street. And so a lot of that was done in that first phase, which was a little over $1 million. And then at that same time, we renovated the upstairs, which now houses Energy Services in Suite 300. On the top floor, and that's very critical to the building because it gives us the stability of income to provide for insurance, heat, and lights, and so forth, so that we can go ahead and do these kinds of shows for the community and then to work on the building itself.
Really preserving something that's so important to our community. You know, it's great to see that kind of TLC is going into the building. And it's great to see that there's the interest in people wanting to preserve something like that. Right now, we're also joined by Roseanne Knorr, who's a newer member of the group. And Roseanne, thank you for joining us this morning. What got you into joining the group?
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me. Well, I've only attended two meetings so far, but those that know me in the community and my husband, Paul, we have gotten quite involved through our retirement and semi-retirement in the last, I don't know how many years. We've been here since about 2010. And so, we do things like coordinating and teaching pickleball, of course. I know they've talked about that a lot. We do those kinds of things, and we want to, you know, we like to socialize. We like to be with people. And some of the things that we like to do is help advertise and communicate with others in our community. This is like a great community. We love it. And we have wonderful opportunities. And I look at the Richland Center City Auditorium or Richland County Performing Arts as just an amazing venue that we really need to take part of. And we want more people to come. We want to get that building just beautified so that people say, I can't wait to go to that auditorium for music this year. So that's what we need to do. I love to advertise and I love to talk about these things. And I love older buildings. I don't have the information and the knowledge of where what happened with this building over the last so many years. I know they've had graduations there and they've had other concerts. If you're interested, just go take a tour of that building. How many of you in Richland Center have not walked into that building? I know the seats are small, but, you know, we have cushions. Come on in, take a look at it. But again, that's, you know, we just had an interest in being on this board. And so that's why my husband and I are willing to help and in any way, shape or form to get people to come to our wonderful, beautiful building.
And, you know, you don't always need the knowledge, but the enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And that is what really helps.
Yes, that's very much right. And it's really an honor for us to have Paul and Roseanne come on. And we also just recently, I might mention, Duane and Shirley Welty joined the board as well. And so our current board, just so if people are interested in talking to someone, consists of Kent Atzett, Paul and Roseanne Knorr, Duane and Shirley Welty, Andrew Sharp, Bob Frank, myself, and then Ken Nitka is his title is technical advisor. So he's technically not a voting board member, but he, anything building related as far as technology or anything, he's there for us. And then Norbert and Susan Callinan have been longstanding. They were part of the original board of directors, the original group that acquired the building from the city for, I think it was $2?
$1.
And I think there's been times along the years where I've heard them say, I wish we still had that dollar back, but but it's all in jest because they've been so passionate and they've carried this group. And so we can't thank them enough. So they're going to be going to an advisory position on the board and relocating out of Richland Center proper. So that's our current board. And the mission, our actual mission, is to protect and restore the Richland Center City Auditorium for the enjoyment, enrichment of generations to come. So that kind of encapsulates what Roseanne was saying, you know, the historical part of it. I love music, I love the performing arts, and I love history. And so for me, it gives me all those things wrapped into one project that I can be part of and excited to be. So.
One of the members that you did mention is here with us as well, Andrew Sharp. Mr. President, it's good to talk to you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. But really, we've talked about the musical side, but the plays, the acting side, that's your specialty, and glad that you're a part of the board too. What have you been working on in terms of productions in our area?
Well, we've been doing productions out at the Coppertop. Of course, I have a great deal of fondness for that theater. But the not to scare off any potential buyers for the county, the heating and air conditioning out there is unreliable. And so we can't really do shows out there. Because of that, we can do them at the City Auditorium, and we've done them there for years. I think the last one was Murder at Coppersmith Inn, but I'm not absolutely positive. But that's our mainstay, really, is the City Auditorium. We have our costumes are there, our props are there in storage, and we do shows there when we can. So this summer I'm going to be directing The Music Man, which is a show I think everybody is familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Well-known, yeah.
Yeah, well-known, a fun show. A lot of people can get involved, all ages. I'll just mention that. And we're going to start out rehearsing at the City Auditorium. And then after a month, we move to the high school where we're actually going to be doing the show. But that's been pretty much the way we've done musicals since we've been doing musicals. So we'll have those rehearsals out there. And in the fall, Leah Garner is going to direct Rope, which was turned into a movie by Alfred Hitchcock. And it's basically, it's not a murder mystery because the murder happens right away and you see it happen more or less. But then it's a psychological thriller of, are these guys going to get caught? So, and that will be at the City Auditorium around, I think the show dates are around Halloween, but not on Halloween. So that's two things that we've got going, you know, in addition to the Symphony on the Rocks. And then Community Players, I'm also shooting a short promotional movie that I would also like to put on TikTok and things like that if I can get like a 10 or 12-year-old to tell me how to do that. We're shooting a movie, and a good part of that movie is going to be shot at the City Auditorium. So at some future point, I'm going to be putting out a pitch for people that might want to be in the movie because there's going to be a scene where there's actors on stage and we need an audience watching it. At least that's how the shooting script is right now. So a lot of things going on, all of them involving the City Auditorium. And what we would do if it wasn't there, you know, I don't really know. So.
Wow, that's some stuff to look forward to there. And really, you know, the call out there for a TikTok tech for our our friend Andrew Sharp.
Right.
Sending out there, you know, get in touch with him. I'm sure that he would be happy to have you show him the ropes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Well, talking about something that's coming up pretty quick, though, the Symphony on the Rocks is coming up, and we're glad to have the show back in our area. Mick, what can you tell us about what people can kind of expect at this year's show?
Well, it is a, for those who haven't seen it, it's a classic rock band that is backed by a symphonic orchestra. And so you get a sound like you maybe have never heard. It's really a powerful, and I refer to it as an epic show because it, if you like classic rock, and so they're playing things, everything from Queen, Foreigner, The Beatles, Journey, Led Zeppelin, Chicago, The Who. I mean, all those, they hit my ear of, hey, this is good stuff. So if you enjoy that kind of, and even just the experience of it, to see the combination, and I didn't play in a high school band, so I'm not, you know, with those kinds of instruments, but do have background in the rock scenario back in the 70s, so I'm excited to have this kind of show, and when we hear the comments from people as they're leaving, wow, and this was in Richland Center, and it's at a price comparatively that, you know, is much cheaper than you would experience if you go into the big city and see a similar show. So just encourage everybody, put that date on your calendar and come and join us.
I mean, I don't want, obviously, yes, join them, that's coming up here, but you said rock in the 70s. What are you, Mick, were you part of a rock band?
I was, been in a band called For Sure that played around Southwest Wisconsin in the 70s. I play guitar, and I was a rhythm guitar player for them. And so, yeah, that's a bit of history that many probably don't remember.
Bo, back in the 70s, we were all in a rock and roll band. That's just how things worked back in the day. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, that part was not explained in my history books,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
Yep. Wow, you learn something new every day. See, this is why I'm glad I sit in for Phil sometimes, you know?
I think that's called modern history now at this point.
Modern history.
Yeah, holy cow, that's awesome. Well, I mean, obviously then you would know the talent that goes into Symphony on the Rocks. The day itself, though, that's coming up on March 23rd. And so, you know, save that date. It's at the Richland Center City Auditorium. Now, the show is at 7. Your doors open at 6. Tickets. How do people get tickets?
They can be found online at eventbrite.com, or you can purchase them locally at Napa Auto and Christy Sunnyside or Ameriprise Financial offices. And I see a phone number on here, Mick. Is this yours?
It is.
Well, that's wonderful that you're sharing. It's 604-7022 for more information. You know, Paul and I will definitely be there, and we'd be glad to have all of our friends come and friends of friends.
The Symphony on the Rocks, again, that is coming up on March 23rd. Put that on your calendar, not far from now. It's at the Richland Center City Auditorium. The show at 7, doors open at 6. Again, you can get tickets online at eventbrite.com, or locally, you can get them at Napa Auto, Christy Sunnyside, or Ameriprise Financial offices. Again, thank you all for stopping in today, and I hope for a great show, and I can't wait to have you guys back on for future shows and to hear more about the Richland Center City Auditorium. Roseanne Knorr, Andrew Sharp, and Mick Cosgrove here on The Morning Show.
You are listening to WRCE 1450 AM, W299 CD, Richland Center.
The Joe.